Welcome to the Your Own Medicine podcast. Thank you for listening. My name is Callie Klug, and I am a yoga teacher and somatic practitioner in Southern California. Your Own Medicine podcast was really created with this idea and this intention of bringing knowledge to you to access the medicine within you and within your own body. So thank you for listening. Let's go. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Your Own Medicine podcast. I love having Dana on the podcast. She's just like so well-read, so well-spoken, so intelligent, and just really articulates these concepts in the most like beautiful way. Like the whole time I'm just like snapping, and just so many things she said like just landed in my body. So I hope that you also enjoy this episode and get a lot out of this conversation. Dana is a nervous system expert, and she guides her clients using nervous system regulation techniques, polyvagal theory, elements from somatic experiencing and parts work, and she's just incredible and a friend of mine as well. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm pretty sure you will. It's fantastic. And if you're curious about Dana and her offerings, check out in the description of this video, and all of her social links are there. All right, Dana, yay!
Hello.
Can you introduce yourself, who you are, where you are, and what it is that you do?
Yeah, so my name is Dana Doswell. Currently, I'm in Canada, but I kind of split my time between here and South America mostly. And I'm a nervous system and somatics coach. And what that really boils down to is I really prioritize nervous system education, and I teach people how to regulate their nervous system. And to me, that comes through body literacy, so understanding how your body actually works. I really like to educate people about something called evolutionary mismatch theory, which is something that not a lot of people in the kind of healing world talk about, but which really refers to how our biology and our physiology is still that of hunter-gatherers, and what that actually means in terms of this gap that our modern lifestyle has created, and how a big part of regulating our nervous system is to close that gap. And from there, I also really prioritize creating live spaces, because we actually need to practice vulnerability in order to regulate our nervous systems. And we need to have access to safety and where self-expression and talking about our emotions are normalized. And that kind of brings me to like my favorite modality, so to speak, that's been really powerful for me is somatic experiencing, which very simply is, where do you feel that? How do you feel that? What color is it? Just getting into all of the sensory ways that you might experience something, and letting the organic intelligence of your body kind of guide you through that and complete what are known as incomplete stress cycles, and or just the cycle that an emotion needs to move through in your body to be completed so it can be released and you can kind of access homeostasis again. So that's really what I help people do, is learn how to do that for themselves. And it's a pretty cool job, to be honest.
You said that so well. You're always so well spoken. I feel like when people ask me what I do, I'm like, like it's like a little tiny blur, but that was beautiful. And so beautifully described just somatics in general. And that's really interesting too. You said, what was it? The evolutionary
mismatch theory.
Okay. Yes. Can you just talk a little bit more on that? Because I've heard you talk about that before, and I feel like it's very relevant.
It is. And I'm so glad I'm getting the opportunity to talk about it, because we often, I think in the modern day with, you know, we have access to social media and we can look at, you know, internal family systems, parts work, shadow work, and all of these things are so incredible. And what is missing from the conversation is this evolutionary piece. So I actually learned about this in a book called The Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century, because I started to see things in my day-to-day where I was just like, is using technology for this Right. And I just kind of started, I was paying attention to the impulses of my body, and my body was kind of like, no, there's like something different. So, in essence, evolutionary mismatch or evolutionary mismatch theory is this theory, which I don't think is really a theory, it's a fact that our biology and physiology is mismatched for our current modern environment, and that mismatch is what is causing a lot of chronic illnesses. So when you look at historically, let's just say before even farming was a thing, chronic illnesses really didn't exist. Like, yeah, maybe like someone would break their arm and they didn't have the same access to care, but chronic illnesses, including depression, autoimmune, anxiety, like all of these chronic illnesses that are also mental illnesses, did not exist. And even in a lot of parts of the world today, and one of the reasons why I've loved living half the time in South America is, like I'll talk to some people that are maybe like 80 plus in those cultures, and they're just like, we don't talk about anxiety. Like that's not and like there's an aspect of suppression to that, but on the other side of it is like, you feel bad, go sit in the sun, talk to someone you love, tell them what's going on, cook a good meal, put your bare feet on the ground. So these are all things that were normal parts of our cultures that happened over the course of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years of evolution, because we are animals that evolved in perfect synchronicity with our environments. And then now all of a sudden, when was the last time that your bare feet were on the ground? Right? Like your feet pick up so much information about gripping the ground, how it feels, how cold it is, if you're on dirt, if you're in the ocean. And we wear these giant New Balance sneakers now that are like this, and then you have socks on them. You're also disconnected from the electrical charge of the earth, and your nervous system is actually an electrical system in your body. So, like all of these things that have made up our ancestral environment have now been ripped away. And you can just imagine it's like putting a fish in a fish tank that has poison in it, and then being like, why are you dying? Why are you unhappy? And a really cool example that I like to give is something called an evolutionary mismatch trap. These are prevalent. So, an evolutionary mismatch trap, as an example, is perfume. So, let's again just say 1,000 years ago, you smell something like that, most likely it's good for you. It's like a flower, right? It's like a flower that is just like opening, and you're smelling the essence of a flower. And I've been studying herbalism now, and like there's aspects of that that are spiritual and psychosomatic. And now when you smell perfume, which if anything has the word fragrance in it, it can have up to 91 different chemicals in it that they do not need to disclose to you, which is an endocrine hormonal dysregulator. Your nervous system is the messenger that says how your hormones need to be regulated. I'm just pausing because you froze for me. Okay, awesome. So you think you're smelling something, and your physiology, your biology that doesn't have the context of the modern world is going, oh my God, this smells so good. Like, give me more of that. But then what's actually happening is you're getting just a whack of hormonal dysregulation, like entering your body through your nose, right into your brain. And it's like, oh, there's a trap. So it's not meant to fear monger. It's more meant to just say regulating your nervous system is fundamentally listening to the more primal animalistic intuition of your body and bringing that into coherence with your mind. And if we are suppressing that animalistic part, then, or we're not giving it its proper environment, it's going to be really hard to be regulated.
Yeah, beautiful. I think too of like I was watching Wolf of Wall Street yesterday talk about dysregulating media.
Oh
That one's really
my
intense. But I was like, and one of the scenes I was telling Oliver, like, I feel like this is what happens. This is like literally what happens when you go to you like evolution too close to the sun. And we've like evolutioned so far that it's like too far. Like we're like
Yeah.
we actually are like I am buying electromagnetic mats and earthing shoes and salt lamps and all these things to replicate just being in nature instead of going outside. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's
it's beautiful.
so to be honest, like fucked up. Like,
Yeah.
and it's one of the things that actually I still go through this, but when I first started to make all these connections, I was so angry, and I actually had to really grieve as part of regulating myself, because I was just like, you know, I look around and I see, you know, like I have young cousins that are women, and like just seeing how much makeup they use, or like you go on social media and seeing, you know, preventative Botox, like, and that's being normalized, and like all these things, it's just like it's sickness, like right in front of us, but it's so normalized. And so like I had to grieve, and I was angry, and then I got frustrated and overwhelmed by exactly what you said, like, well, do I just need to make an insane amount of money to like to afford all of these biohacking products, and how do I protect myself and all of these things? And they're very real, valid questions and considerations if you want to be someone who's regulated, because the stress of that can, whew, knock you over.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really interesting point too. Do I need to just make a ton of money? I feel like a lot of people, and I don't know if this is just in my circle, but I feel like a lot of people are actually like the new dream is like homesteading. Have you probably
100%.
that? And it's just interesting how it's like we like evolutioned out of farm life and just to like have that be the new gold standard to come back to.
Well, and I have no idea if this is, you know, how recent this was or whatever, but something that was circling in my circle of friends was this study that showed that farmers are the happiest people with their jobs. And
Wow.
I'm like, you're so in tune with your natural environment. You're outdoors every day. Your circadian rhythm is regulated. You're probably sleeping well. You're connected to animals. You have to know when and what to do based on your intuition and connection to the earth. And like, that's so, to me, that's so beautiful. Like, now I literally am like, I'm volunteering at farms like this summer. And it's like exactly what you said. We evolutioned so far that now we're like, hey, wait a second. Wait a second. Like, I can just put my feet on the earth. That's nice.
I don't need this mat. That's
Yeah,
three
that was like,
thousand dollars.
right? Yeah, crazy. Crazy, not crazy. Like, do you know, I believe that one of the ways that I practice nervous system regulation for myself, and I say to people, this is actually a really cool segue. Two things. Number one is modern solutions for modern challenges. You know, artificial light is not something that you're going to be able to escape, right? Like, that is a part of our environment now. And so, like, I do use blue light blockers during the daytime when I'm on my computer a lot. And I definitely use like intense red ones at nighttime to support my sleep, because that's realistic. Unless I want to like move out, be isolated, and not be, you know, in society, which right now for me, I'm not doing that. So modern solutions for modern challenges are very valid. And then also, as much as you can, looking and saying, okay, where is that line between I can put a little bit more effort and like go for a morning walk, versus have a, you know, a lamp that mimics the sun inside your house, as an example. And then the cool segue, because I know we really want to talk about shame in the nervous system, which is so funny. Sometimes I meet people now, like, what do you do? And I'm like, I research shame. And I'm like, they're like, oh, and then they get all scared. And I'm just
Yeah,
like,
I'd probably be
yeah.
like, okay, well, that's good for you. I'm an accountant.
Yeah, exactly. And then they just feel so seen. And I'm just like, yes, I see you. But yeah, the other part of that is it's really important to de-shame and remove shame around the ways that we need to access support and access health in the modern day, because it is different. Human connection is behind a paywall, right? Like, my entire business is a business to regulate your nervous system and help you feel better, and you do have to pay me for it. That did not used to exist. It was like, go see your medicine woman in your community and maybe bring her a loaf of bread that your family baked, or you just go talk to your family. And there were rituals and practices in these more ancestral communities that we've lost. And so now we actually need to replicate that and replace it in some way. And because we exist in a capitalist society, you need to typically pay to access those things.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point that there's only so much we can realistically do. Because, like, I mean, there are certain things that are in our control and certain things that are obviously out of our control. And the way that our society is structured, I think, is one thing that is extremely out of our control. Like, just the way things are with pharmaceuticals and food and just actual infrastructure, like, it is what it is. But, like you said, there's like certain things within our control that are also available to our current capacity. Like, sometimes they don't have the capacity to do all of these things, but I can do like one. You know what I mean? And so, one thing that I've seen you talking about a lot on your social media is shame and how it actually dysregulates your nervous system. And I know I resonate a lot with that because I feel like I've felt shame, and it's like this weird, like, extra layering that, from my experience, like, let's say I don't do the thing I wanted to do, or oh, this is a good one. I'm in my luteal phase right now, and I'm just feeling like a bitch. And I'm like feeling shame about feeling like a bitch. And then I'm just feel even shittier. But I'm like doing this shame as like a self-corrective measure, but it doesn't help.
Yes. Oh my God. Okay. A couple of things that you said really stick out to me. So, how you experience it as this additional layer is so important to understand because for me and for a lot of people, you can tell that shame is this quote unquote missing piece or what's happening because you can try and feel your feelings like the fear, the tiredness, the anxiety, and it helps a bit, but you can tell that it's not getting to the root of it. And shame is our fundamentally when we have internalized shame and it is impacting the base level function of our nervous system. What that actually is how are we perceiving ourselves? And this is like the really nuanced, beautiful, and tricky part of it. So for you know, we're talking about being in your luteal phase, which, yeah, you literally are more sensitive and on a, you know, from a really cool feminine spiritual perspective, this is when you are the most in tune with your intuition and the realm between or the veil between realms or spirituality is very thin for you and you're super connected. And because you're super connected, you're super sensitive. So it's this idea of like you're seeing reality with completely no bullshit goggles on. And that's super cool. And we have all of this implicit shame. We're going to get into this in a second that you've probably internalized, like many other women, which is PMS. If you're a bitch the 10 days before your period, that's just because you're a girl and you're silly. And that means you're stupid and men are better than you and they have access to logic and you don't. And you can feel as you go into this, there's an energy to it, a sensation in your body of shame, of heaviness, of sitting in your gut, of embarrassment, of heat on your cheeks, of curling inwards, of wanting to turn away from people. And that is the experience of shame. And it's so sneaky because there's this kind of shame which is implicit or invisible, which is not someone sitting there saying, because you're a woman and you're different than men, you should feel bad about being in your luteal phase. It's not that direct. But you know it, and your body knows it, and your nervous system is operating as if that reality is the only valid one.
So, okay, what you were just describing, you said helpless, heaviness, curling in. So, freeze state.
Really interesting. So, yes, I would say, generally speaking, okay, actually, let me take a step back. I want to differentiate between a full collapse and something that we can label as functional freeze. You might have seen this before. So functional freeze is a blended state where you are kind of hovering and oscillating between shutdown and activation. A lot of us experience this in the very typical, you're up, you're doing things during the day, and you collapse in front of the TV or on the couch at night, or during the week, you're on it, and then the weekend comes and you are like hermit. Netflix, order food, collapse kind of thing. And then there's full shutdown, which is you're just collapsed pretty much all the time and you are unable to access those peaks of activation. So shame for a lot of people plays a role in both. But when we're talking about that true shutdown collapse, your body's fully in a depressed state, like you're depleted physiologically of energy. Shame is often such a main driver of that. And that's really important to understand for trying to help yourself to get out of it.
And so how do you, but let's say I'm in a functional freeze where I'm in my luteal phase, like just as an example, I'm feeling really sensitive, I'm being snappy and snippy as I am in my luteal phase, and I just feel like shit about it, and I'm having this implicit shame like you described, and I start to feel it worse and worse, and I start to get heavier and heavier. How do I unravel that? Like, what do you recommend to people to take off the layer of shame?
So there's I always kind of frame it like this. There are in the moment like kind of ways where like you're describing something and we can kind of call it as like the acute situation. Like right now in this moment, you're feeling heavy and bad. So I like to look at it, what are ways that we can support you right now in the moment? And then what's other type of work that we can engage in to help almost in this preventative root cause healing approach where we want you to feel less of this over and over again in the future. So ideally, eventually coming to a point where you're not feeling this kind of shame. So typically, the way that we can approach this is a lot of the time you'll have coping mechanisms that are your right now ways of dealing with the shame. And this is really important to understand because shame is like a multi-layered sandwich. So you have this sensitivity that is your part, right? We can use parts here. Your part is feeling sensitive. Now you have this voice, this critic that might be implicit shame, that's the voice of society, voice of social media posts, voice of your mom, voice of whoever, shaming that part. So you have the part that is shamed, you have the voice that is the shaming voice. And then because shame sucks to fucking experience, like it's awful, we try and dissociate and numb out and do things to not feel the shame. And then we feel shame about those coping mechanisms because we're like, we're supposed to be self-aware.
It
What's
is a
happening?
sandwich, huh?
So, what we're doing in the moment, and typically what feels most present is the shame or the agitation and the frustration around the coping mechanisms that we are using in the moment. And when we are delayering those or dissolving the shame around our coping mechanisms, that gives us access to the more deeply rooted shame, which is what is the underlying story that your nervous system has latched onto of what it says about you as a person to be sensitive. That's what we eventually want to get to. That is the foundational root level work and addressing the coping mechanism and things like very simply. Most people don't feel that they are allowed to behave differently ever. You're supposed to exhibit the same mature, in control, self-regulated behavior all the time. And so, de-shaming some of that story, that implicit shame that, okay, if I'm sensitive, like right now, I'm just not allowed to do that. I can't even look at the fact that I'm doing that. It's like, no, you're actually allowed to do that. Like you're allowed to be a snappy person for a day or 10 days. Like that's actually totally fine in the cosmic moral landscape. That's 100% fine. Does that mean that someone that you love might be slightly hurt by you? Yeah. That's normal. That is a normal part of the human experience. And then the other part of it is changing that relationship with the coping mechanism. Like they are there to serve you, they're there to help you. And yes, there's a spectrum of how good they are for us on one level. You know, like for me, smoking weed was always one of my main ones. And on one level, like it helped me in the moment. Like I was like, holy fuck, I feel amazing. Dopamine hit. I like myself. I can be in my body. This is great. And then, yeah, like my lungs didn't feel good. And I had some other like health issues that came from that. But when you are sensitive, you do need to change your environment, probably, right? Because you are more sensitive. So things like there might be specific people that you don't want to hang out with, or if you do hang out with them, you can recognize and normalize it for yourself. I'm going to be ruder to them. That's okay. That's okay. So one practice that I often give to people as homework, I love that you're laughing so hard because it's just like, oh my God, I'm allowed to do this. Yeah. Right. And obviously, you know, we can differentiate here between like, and I know you talk about this a lot, which I love, which is I'm not consciously thinking of how to hurt this person. That's not what we're talking about. It's simply like, don't ask me for the 10th time if I want this thing. I already said no, and I'm extra sensitive. So instead of being patient with you for the 10th time, I'm going to be like, no.
Two things that really hit for me when you were saying that. Number one is you were talking about like this, I don't how do it like disconnecting from Western Christian morality of what is a good person and what is not. Because I know for myself, like growing up in a Christian environment, I felt so much shame when I was like doing things that a bad person would do, because bad people deserve terrible lives. And I'm like, I don't want to be a bad person. I want a good life. And so if being snappy, like, is that okay? Does that make me a bad person? And if it does, is that okay?
Yes. Okay. Two incredible things that you just brought up. So, number one, religious shame is so incredibly toxic. I like my TikTok videos are full of people in the comments being like, oh, this is like growing up Christian or Catholic. And I know
It's
Catholic can
very
be like another
real.
level. Yeah. And so, okay, really cool thing I want to talk about here. When we talk about nervous system conditioning and your nervous system conditioning being like the operating system that your nervous system uses to make sense of the world, a piece of conditioning is a story and a meaning that we know by experiencing it through our felt sensations. What does that mean? To
Wait,
just,
say that one more
yes.
time.
Okay. So we are, do you want me to just say the whole thing over?
Just the last part.
Okay. So a story or a piece of nervous system conditioning is essentially a story that has a meaning to it about who we are as a person. And that story is imprinted into our nervous system through the sensations, the somatic sensations and experience of that story.
Okay.
So, to use your example, being a snappy person is not what a good Christian does, right? And if a good Christian is not a good person, and they're a bad person, and that means you're a sinner and you're going to go to hell, and if society is going to hate you, you're now being rejected and abandoned, which hits on the deepest level of your nervous system, which is to survive, which is to have access to community and safety. This is how shame is the vehicle of suppression. It is what is used to suppress and create suppressed parts to create a shadow self, if we want to bring shadow work into it. So there's that deeper meaning, right? Like, and then in another family, being snappy might not have that meaning, right? Being snappy could be normal. So what we are doing fundamentally when we are regulating our nervous system and bringing these unconscious, we talk about belief systems, or people talk a lot about them in the mindset world. And so much of what they say is accurate, but they miss the majority of the piece of it, which is a belief is not a thought. A belief is the coded conditioning associated with a meaning and a story that you experience through all the felt sensations in your body. That is what a belief actually is. And so when we are
It's
undoing
embodied.
beliefs, thank you, exactly. It's in your body. And so when we need to regulate, and meaning that we need to change these belief systems, because what I also really want to come back to is this organic evolutionary intelligence of your body. Your body knows on one level that being snappy does not mean that you're going to hell, and that it's actually a part of the normal human experience to have different moods, to not sleep well and be snappier. That's a normal part of the human experience. And this is the crux of a lot of what's happening today and why we have so much toxic shame is, does it make sense to shame someone if they go around killing people? Yeah. Does it make sense to shame someone for being snappy or for having a messy house? No, it does not. Because shame is very different than guilt or embarrassment. Shame is I am bad, and guilt and embarrassment might be I did something bad. So it is really important to recognize when it's appropriate to shame people, and it's almost never, like almost never. But now
I have a lot of feelings
yes.
about that.
Oh yeah. So this whole idea of like, what is part of the normal human experience, and have you been chronically shamed for it? Most people would say yes. That is implicit, invisible shame that we need to unravel so that your body can actually come into a state of congruence with what that organic intelligence knows to be true and what you spend so much effort resisting because that's what you were taught.
Hallelujah,
yeah.
sister. One thing that came up for me when you were saying all of that, well, I have so many like thoughts, but when I was like experiencing the internet's sweet, swift hand of quote justice, which is basically just a narcissistic shame ball, so abusive. And anyway, I remember like seeing comments and think like in my head, I do this a lot. I'll like look in the mirror and be like, well, blah, 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 like I'm fighting back to them. And I was like, what if I just, like, they're saying I'm a bad person. What if I just, instead of saying, no, I'm not a bad person, I was like, yeah. And I felt this, like, softening. Like, yeah, okay, I'm a bad person. My body doesn't care if I'm a bad person, but my body cares if I'm against it. Like, if I'm against myself, my body tenses up. But if I just think, oh, I'm a bad person, my body's like, okay.
I love this. I love that you did that. I'm so happy for you. And also, I think that's a real testament to your relationship with yourself and the work that you've done to be able to follow that impulse of your body and kind of say, hey, wait a minute. What if there's another way to interact with this situation? And there was, and it was a way that was much more, that was much safer for you and real for you. And what you're talking about and why it's so important to actually bring this, what is definitely a psychological concept, but the concept of identity into the conversation is, you know, as cliche as this sounds, what we think and feel about ourselves is the most important thing. And so what this does, and your like your example is it, this is the difference between, you know, you're on social media and someone says, you are bad because you did this. And someone who is not clear on their identity, that does not have an embodied sense of self, that's going to come like into their heart,
oh,
like,
yeah.
An arrow, and that's going to make you think that that person is right. You have no ability when you do not have a strong identity and sense of self to defend against anything. And you are so disoriented.
Yeah.
Versus someone coming out and saying you're a bad person. And either you have a couple of options. I don't know you. Who are you? Get like, bye. Like you, like, there's just no, even like, you don't even feel it in your energy field. Your nervous system doesn't even register that because you're just like, I don't know you. You have no concept of who I am. So I don't like give a shit about your opinion. Or this other one. Okay. Well, if I am a bad person, I like myself, so that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's all, I think of it really in this sense of, you know, your nervous system or your energy of your body is not permeable. It is in flux with you, but it's not allowing people in as a way to try and survive. You have recognized that actually you can survive without ever letting someone into the very root of your being. And not only can you survive, but you can feel better and feel really good and even safer. So this is where shame is so important. Going back to this simple sentence, shame is I am bad. Guilt is I did something bad. And so this is why shame is the ultimate nervous system dysregulator, because if we are always coming at ourselves with this shame voice and this relationship. So essentially think of like your relationship with yourself. If that is driven by shame, which for a lot of people it is. So the way that you motivate yourself to take action is, if you don't do this, that says this about you and that's bad. Instead of, I'm choosing to do this. It's completely different. And so when shame is the underlying force, this is like, I'm trying to fix myself instead of I'm trying to support myself. I hate myself, but I'm trying to pretend that I don't hate myself, or I
Oh, I'm
hate
trying to
myself.
fix myself is like, bro.
It.
I feel
Yes.
like that's why so many people are like constantly like, oh, healing, next level of healing, 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 healing. I'm like, when are you like fully healed, if ever? Like, don't
Yeah.
you want to feel just like good enough? Like, I'm good.
Yes.
I'm good. I don't need to keep like
Yes.
looking for things to fix. I think I learned that from you in your post. You were like, stop reading self-help. You don't need to be fixed. Like, you're good as you are. And I was like, no. And then I
But
stopped reading
maybe.
self-help. Yeah. And then I was like, oh
Yeah.
my gosh, I feel like my life got so much better when I stopped trying to constantly fix myself. It's so exhausting. And it just brings up, I don't know if it's shame or if it's just constantly orienting towards like, you talked about this in a previous like chat that we had, a previous podcast where you were talking about how it's you're just constantly orienting towards like what can I fix? What's wrong with me? And
Yeah.
it's just dysregulating for your nervous system.
One of the things that you just reminded me of is to kind of help conceptualize everything that you're saying is shame causes us to live so that we don't die. Like that's the fundamental, like we're trying to live
Like
so that,
survival.
yeah, but it's like sometimes survival, I feel like, doesn't fully explain it enough. It's like the original quote that I heard that I loved was like dysregulated people will work to not lose instead of work to win, or play to lose instead of play to win. And I was like translating that into shame is like we are constantly playing to not die instead of, or we're constantly playing to be included or belong in some way instead
To
of
be
just
not
playing,
bad.
yeah, to be exactly not bad instead of to be ourselves. And so it's like this very inverse. Yeah,
Oh, that's
yeah.
so good.
It's this inverse way. And it's so interesting because when you play or live life to be yourself, every single energy system in your body is online and in flow, working congruently together, operating, you know, we can say optimize, and I don't mean this to be productive. It's simply to make you as an organism feel so fucking good and alive and able to experience life. And so when we are shaming ourselves, we're essentially taking all of that life force and using it to suppress ourselves instead of move
Oh my
forward.
God, that's such a good description of it. Because it does feel like self-oppression.
That's it. It's depleting, oppression, suppression, holding yourself back, stuck, stagnation. Those are all sensations and words to describe the embodied experience of specifically being under chronic shame.
Beautiful.
One of the things that you, sorry,
No,
just one thing that you
go
said, I don't
ahead.
want to forget it. So I've been learning about herbalism, and there's this really cool framing that I think gives really powerful language to like, why are we like this? What happened? And this has to do with religion and patriarchy, probably not surprising to a lot of people. So, you know how a lot of guys, at least in my experience, that are, you know, Christian or Catholic, have a little bit of this like hero complex, right? I'm gonna
Jesus.
be, yeah, right? I'm gonna be the provider. My wife can just be blonde in a field with some cows and like have a bunch of babies, right? Like, that's this like, the religious homesteading vision of like a lot of the trad wife men vibe kind of thing, right?
Yes.
So this also got injected into our medical system and completely shifted the way that we look at the body as a whole. So in herbalism, we talk about the heroic versus the wise woman approach to healing. For most of human history, all we had was the wise woman approach, which is looking at the body as a full energy system. And if you come to me and you say that you're depressed and you haven't pooped in 3 days, those two things are related. The heroic medical system looks at symptoms and dissects them independently from each other, does not look at you as a whole being. And is this what can we fix? What can we dominate? What can we rip out of the body? And all pharmaceuticals are based off of this heroic approach. They treat one part of the body without looking at the body as an overall system. So this is why you have birth control, and then you get a side effect from birth control. You're given something for the side effect of the birth control. Then you have side effects from that, and you're given another thing. The wise woman approach is, number one, disease to a degree is normal, and it's your body signaling and speaking to you. There's wisdom in your symptoms. We need to learn how to listen to them. Your body is an overall energy system. And it's much more about recognizing that your symptoms are telling you what is out of balance, and then gently working with your body on a physical, emotional, spiritual, and communal level, which is extremely important because we're so hyper independent now, to bring your body back into balance. And the wise woman is not the hero. She is someone that might have more knowledge than you, but she is supporting you to learn how to work with your own body. The heroic is the doctor in the white lab coat that is an expert. Expert culture uses shame to make you feel like you don't know what is right for your body, but you do. The doctor is not an expert on your body, only you are. So all of these things are implicit shame that are built into our society, and they are very connected to religion and this organization of our society as it is. And I think it's really important to challenge that without dysregulating yourself, but realizing that you are actually the only expert on your own body.
Wow, interesting. I feel like we could get into that, but we have some questions that people submitted,
Yeah.
and I'd love to get to touch on these. So we have about like 12 minutes left, so maybe just like a few minutes per question because we have four and they're beautiful. All
Yay.
right. So the first one says, it feels like somatic practices only take me so far. I feel that I'm always chasing and searching for this regulated nervous system, a body I feel safe in. Why do some people have such a hard time finding a regulated nervous system?
Oh, thank you so much for that question. And it's so perfect for what we're talking about because this was my exact experience. Sometimes things help me, sometimes things work for me, and I could never put my finger on like why on that random Tuesday breathwork made me feel better, but then the next day it didn't. And without knowing you, this person, the first thing that I would say is that the way that you are engaging with these practices is probably the missing factor. And it sounds like there might be shame at play there. And what that means is, are you looking at breath work to fix you? Are you looking at it as an external output to inject into your body to force your body to submit to you? Because a lot of the time, that's what ends up happening. And then your body's like, I'm going to scream at you louder. Because we're not actually working with that organic intelligence in the body. So, as annoying and meta as this might be, what I would suggest for you is to kind of sit with the question of what is my relationship to these practices and these modalities that I am trying to use. The second thing that I would also just say is somatic practices are tools to regulate your nervous system. They are not nervous system regulation. So that's really important to understand. And what we're talking about today, shame and the way you see yourself and how you feel as you're moving through your day, those are often a lot more important. And then the tools come in when you're like, okay, what feels right for me? The other practical piece of advice that I would give you is to give yourself a menu of options and start to learn how to trust what a yes feels like in your body. So we get very in our head of like, breath work is good. So I'm going to do breath work 3 times a week. So instead, let's say you said, okay, I'm going to try and not shame myself. And I'm connecting with doing a somatic practice from the place of, I just want to know what's going on more inside my body instead of trying to force your body to do something. Then sit down and say, okay, do I offer your body some options? Do I want to scream into a pillow? Do I want to listen to some rhythmic music and just intuitively move? Do I want to do breath work? Do I need to have a conversation with a friend? And give yourself some options and see what your body responds to in the moment instead of trying to say breath work is good for you, do it. Say, here are some options. What am I feeling? So these are some ways that we can cultivate a relationship with that organic intelligence in your nervous system that knows what you need when provided the options and the safety, which comes from not shaming, not judging, and not forcing things onto yourself.
Amazing. So, like, less prescriptive and more intuitive.
Exactly.
Beautiful. The next question is, how do you heal nervous system dysregulation related to destructive relationship patterns?
Okay, I could talk about that
That's a
for
really,
96 hours straight.
yeah, that's like attachment theory and relational
Yeah.
trauma.
So I really like this question because 2023 for me was the year of detoxing my anxious attachment wound from my body. And when I say detoxing, I had a month where I was crying on the floor for almost hours every day. Like I could literally feel the addiction being broken in my body. So I want to start with that by saying one thing to be very aware of, because when we talk about attachment and relational trauma, that is a main pillar of your identity, meaning that as we start to deconstruct it, you're gonna be destabilized. And I just really want people to be aware of that because you do need a lot of support to dive that deeply. So that's the first thing I want to say. Second, it sounds like you are aware that there are destructive patterns. And so I would really invite you, as much as it feels safe for you, to do two things. Number one, this one is very practical. Look for or find examples of what regulated, healthy attachment looks like. And if this is a destructive pattern in romantic relationships for you, or it's every relationship, then find a romantic example and find a friendship example. This could be in a movie. This could be literally finding, like, an influencer on social media. And you don't need to know, like, are they for sure like this? But just what does this look like? There's probably going to be things like genuine reciprocity. There's going to be people that are encouraging each other to be their full selves. There's going to be a focus on conscious communication. There's going to be a focus on consistency. There's going to be a focus on making each other a priority. Those are all things that are both within romantic and friendships. And then what I want you to do is, in a really gentle somatic way, I want you to read through this list or this example, and I want you to notice how your body relates to it. And what I mean by that, do you feel like you want to move towards that? Do you feel like you want to move away from that? Do you feel conflicted? Does that sound nice, but there's almost a panic inside of you at the idea of having that? So what we're doing here is we are deconstructing or connecting with the actual relationship you have with attachment to see what your body says. Where do we go from here? The second thing that I want you to do, similar to that, is this is a question I love saying to people. Who would you be, or what types of relationships would you have if your priorities were to feel safe and to be safe being yourself? And same thing there, like recognizing, there might be people in your life that you are trauma bonded to, that when you express yourself, you are shamed, but you're so in it and that feels so normal to you that on one hand, that feels safer than being like, oh my God, somebody could actually love me for being who I am and it could be safe to express myself. And being really fucking honest with yourself if that's what's happening. Like, don't try and be toxic positive and be like, I can just heal it. Like, be really honest about where you're at. Go through those exercises and notice what your body speaks to you in terms of what a micro action after that could be. Try not to engage in giant cathartic, I'm gonna change everything all at once, but a micro action.
Amazing. That's a great answer to a very loaded question.
Yeah.
So we don't have time for the last two, but the last one I would love for you to answer with some information about your offerings because I think it really is perfect for that. This last one says, if I'm seeing signs that I have a dysregulated nervous system, what is the first thing I should do? Where do I start?
Okay. The first thing that I always say to people is what I call nervous system or body literacy. So this is, how does your nervous system work? Why does it work that way? Because what this is going to do is empower you to bring agency back into your relationship with your body and to validate your own normal human experience. That in and of itself helps you address shame. And it's also super empowering because now you're actually learning how to work with your body. This is something that every single one of my offerings always has within it. The first phase always is focused on empowering education. And my new program that I'm running is called Unshackled. It's a 7-week shadow work and de-shaming program. And I'm actually bringing a clinical herbalist to come in who is incredible. She's been studying identity and evolution alongside her herbalism studies. And we're going to actually be moving through a lot of this in terms of how to recognize what state you're in and how that relates to the type of dysregulation that you might be experiencing, including things like how physical symptoms of dysregulation are related to the emotional experiences that we're having. As a very, very quick side note to that, as an example, I had chronic cystic acne really bad for 14 years, very related to shame. And when I was able to address shame, I get compliments on my skin now. Like I'm like looking at me, you would never think that. And it's like, holy shit, like that's an incredible transformation. So body and nervous system literacy, I would move that into activating this practice of de-shaming, which is normalizing your human experience, mapping out this explicit versus implicit shame experience that you might have had in your life so that you can make the unconscious conscious and you can start to unlearn and unravel what might be shame-based patterning in your nervous system, which gets us to phase two, which is super cool. And most people miss this part, which is learning how to self-attune first. So when your nervous system is orienting itself through shame, it's really difficult to orient yourself first. Because what you always want to do is prioritize other people's needs above your own so that you know how to act in order to survive. When we remove that conditioning, which is people pleasing, when we remove that conditioning, we're kind of in this void, this like, where do I go from here? That is a really important space to be in where you learn how to self-attune. And based on what you learn about yourself when you self-attune, now you can start to engage in compassionate self-correction, which is choosing vulnerability-based behaviors over shame-based behaviors, and have the support, the regulation, the safety, and the presence to create shifts in your tangible environment, like having a hard conversation, leaving a job, moving, whatever it is, like a real tangible change in your environment. But most people only focus on that. So there's a lot of this pre-work you need to do to be able to hold that safely. So that is what I would say is the education into de-shaming, into kind of like this three phase of making the unconscious conscious and de-shaming, learning how to self-attune, and then learning to compassionately self-correct. And yeah, that's the first 3 weeks of my Unshackled program. So by week three, you will actually have those skills. We're going to do a really cool thing called a vulnerability clinic, where you're going to have the opportunity to practice vulnerability and the language of vulnerability. And you're going to be in a place where I can say that it's going to be safe. You will have to be the discerner of if it's safe for you. But my intention is going to be a really safe place for you to come in and practice that vulnerability. So, yeah, I hope that anyone who's listening to this that's vibing with that will come in the program because it's going to be awesome.
And when does that start?
You can enroll February 1st, and our first week is February 12th.
Amazing. And where can people find you on social media?
So on both TikTok and on Instagram, I am at Dana Dozzy, DanaDozzyY.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'll put all of your links in the podcast notes as well. Thank you so
Thank
much. Always love, I could sing hallelujah the whole time
you.
talking. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode with Dana. She's amazing, right? If you would like to experience absolute amazing nervous system regulation to the 10th degree, join me and Tatiana Nocello at our Journey to Paradise retreat this summer, June 19th to the 23rd. In Three Rivers, California, right outside of Sequoia National Park. We are hosting a retreat there, yoga and somatics retreat. It is at this luxury glamping ground. The options for accommodation are either a luxury glamping tent or a mirrored glass cabin. They are both absolutely magical. We have one tent left and two cabins left. We are selling out. So if you are curious, click the link in the show notes and learn more because it's going to be absolutely amazing. That's all for today for the Your Own Medicine podcast. Thank you so much for listening. These episodes do come out pretty sporadically, so if you'd like to be notified each time a new episode comes out, please subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can always follow my journey along, which I always post when a new episode comes out on my social media, TikTok and Instagram, at Kelly Klug Yoga. And feel free to keep in touch. You can also check out my website at kellyklugyoga.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.